Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the February 9th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's tip off here in the USA. The Phoenix Suns have been shining brightly this National Basketball Association season. The Suns are hoping for a return to the NBA Finals. Our Sunny Side of Sports listeners will remember Phoenix lost to the Milwaukee Bucks 4-2 in the 2021 NBA Finals. On Tuesday night, the Suns beat the host Philadelphia 76ers for their league-leading 44th win of the season. The AP's Dave Ferry reports.
The Suns rallied from a 14-point deficit to win for the 14th time in 15 games, 114-109 at Philadelphia. Devin Booker poured in 35 points, and Chris Paul hit a pair of big shots while providing 16 points and 12 assists. Paul canned a free throw to put the Suns up 199, then buried a three-pointer after the Sixers lost the ball on their next possession. Mikal Bridges added 23 points to the Suns' league-leading 44th win.
We could easily have an excuse, you know, playing yesterday, you know, back-to-back. But we just kept with it, man, kept fighting, and up, you know, winning.
Joel Embiid had 34 points and 12 rebounds for the Sixers, though he mishandled the ball twice in the final minutes. I'm Dave Ferry.
Thanks, Dave. Elsewhere around the NBA Tuesday night, Giannis Antetokounmpo and the reigning champion Milwaukee Bucks scored a 131-116 road victory against the Los Angeles Lakers. Giannis had a great all-around game for the Bucks: 44 points, 14 rebounds, and 8 assists. It was Milwaukee's fourth consecutive win. The other winners on Tuesday night in the NBA were the Atlanta Hawks, the Boston Celtics, the Memphis Grizzlies, the New Orleans Pelicans, the Dallas Mavericks, the Denver Nuggets, the Orlando Magic, and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Taking a quick look at the NBA standings, the Miami Heat are in first place in the Eastern Conference, a half game ahead of the Milwaukee Bucks. And the Phoenix Suns are in first place in the Western Conference, 3 games ahead of the Golden State Warriors.
Sporty greetings. This is Masai Ujiri, the president of Toronto Raptors Basketball, president of Giants of Africa Foundation. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
And a quick update on Masai Ujiri's Toronto Raptors. They'll be back on the court later Wednesday night when they visit the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Raptors were the NBA champions in 2019. They currently have a record of 29 wins and 23 losses. Oklahoma City has a losing record, 17 victories and 36 defeats. And let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Toronto's leading scorer, the Cameroonian Pascal Siakam, who is averaging more than 21 points per game.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C.
Chelsea and Germany defender Antonio Rudiger was recently named a Brand Global Sierra Leone football ambassador. During his trip to Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown, the 28-year-old Rudiger also launched his foundation, which he says focuses on 4 main areas: infrastructure, education, inclusivity, and literacy. In part 2 of his interview with VOA's Peter Cloti, Rudiger talked about his foundation team.
Yes, I have a team. I have a team of, we are quite a big team. I think it was, don't get me wrong, it's 6 to 7 people who are really into this. And we are talking, we are on a daily basis on contacts and to find ideas and where we go next.
Will you have a chance of taking some of your colleague soccer players in Chelsea there to go help with, you know, the work that your foundation is doing?
For sure. Like I'm very sure, because at the end of the day, like, I have good friends in football who are eager to help. I already did a thing without even the foundation, like with Mesut Özil was involved, N'Golo Kanté was involved. So I think I hope they join, definitely.
The president was talking about the mask campaign, you know, to protect the people against the COVID and, you know, restrict the spreading of the disease and all that. What motivated you to get into it before even your foundation was launched?
Yeah, it's just this. It's just in general, because it was like in Europe, COVID hit very hard, and you just hear people are dying and stuff like this. And then, yeah, you think back, my parents are there, and not only my parents, just the whole population. I just thought, because I'm not a doctor, I'm not, this is not my area, but you just hear people are dying. So I was afraid that something like Ebola is, you know, like, coming again and stuff like this. And so I said, like, if there's any chance I can help, yeah, that was my motivation.
So where do you see your foundation in Sierra Leone within the next 5 years?
Ooh, at the end of the day, like, you never know what happens, because at the end of the day, like, I would, like, my personal goal, what we want to achieve is definitely to improve in lots of aspects. Education is more like, it takes a long time, to be honest. That's not from today to tomorrow. But what I want to really achieve very early is the structure, like in the infrastructure. There I want to go, because that's obviously that's what people see, because we all know you're African too. So, you know, the African man believes in what he see.
When you interacted with the children in Sierra Leone, you even went to watch a soccer match where some of the disabled were playing. What was your message to them?
Well, my message to them is that, you know, at the end of the day, they think maybe nobody sees them, but that's what I wanted to confirm to them. There's actually people who care about them. This was my message.
With you becoming the sports ambassador, global sports ambassador for Sierra Leone, what will you want to achieve with this new role?
With this new role, to achieve, like, to show a different type of country. Because to be honest, we mostly been in the dark light, and this is what I want to. I don't want that anymore. I just don't want that, because yes, like, yeah, we've been through civil war, we had Ebola, but we survived. We are still there. So I don't want people to look up on us. No, I want people to see us as equal. That's what I want.
Before you go, Antonio, what will be your message to the people of Sierra Leone? What should be their expectations for your foundation going forward?
Yeah, first of all, like, at the end of the day, what I want to tell all the people is, as I said before, it's not a one-man show, definitely not. And that's why I did the foundation in Sierra Leone, to connect with the people. And we have to put ourselves in a role. We have to be role models, not only myself. And that's why I launched it there, so to have people on board so we can grow together. And first of all, but the most important thing is, like, I want to put my country in the limelight. I want to put my country up there. And but what people should know, this doesn't happen through day and night. It's a long process, and I believe in the process, and I am 100% like ready to go that way.
I understand you just came back from training. How was training? How is the team? And what are your expectations with some of the league matches coming up in the Champions League and all that? Briefly talk to me about it.
Yeah, like today was an easy session. It was great to see the boys again. And expectations. Yeah, we have we have the chance to win two trophies in this calendar of February, and we are looking up to it. And as normal, it will not be easy. It will not be easy task. But if you want to be number one, yes, you have to beat the best.
That's Chelsea and Germany defender Antonio Rudiger, who was recently named a Brand Global Sierra Leone Football Ambassador. And he spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from London.
Sporting greetings. This is William Cho Sekong from Watford Football Club and Nigeria Super Eagles. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
William Cho Sekong and the Super Eagles of Nigeria advanced to the round of 16 at the recent Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Cameroon, where they lost to Tunisia 1-0. I know many Nigerians were hoping the Super Eagles would make it to even a later stage of the tournament. Joining us now from Yaoundé, Cameroon, with some of the Nations Cup highlights and lowlights, is Samson Omale.
The 2021 AFCON will be remembered as a historic, record-setting and record-breaking event. It also had its low and high moments. Let's take a look at a few of them. Pre-tournament favorite Algeria took a 34-match unbeaten record to Cameroon, but the Riyad Mahrez-led Desert Foxes failed to win a match as they made an ignominious first-round exit. Burkina Faso surrendered a 3-goal lead to lose the third-place playoff against Cameroon, repeating the meltdown of 1998 when they failed to consolidate on a 4-1 lead against the Democratic Republic of Congo. Cameroon became the 8th consecutive Cup of Nations host who failed to win the competition, exiting in the semifinals after poor penalty taking in the shootout against Egypt. In Douala, one of the venues that hosted some of the matches, the multi-million dollar Japoma Stadium had two knockout fixtures switched to Yaoundé as a result of the poor state of the pitch. In terms of financial rewards, there were record financial rewards for the best 8 teams in Cameroon, with the champions pocketing $5 million, runners-up $2.75 million, semifinalists $2.2 million, and quarterfinalists $1.18 million. And now to some of the low moments from the 2021 AFCON. The stampede at the eye-catching 60,000-seat Stade Olumbé in Yaoundé, which was built purposely for the Cup of Nations, will be remembered as the venue where 8 people died in a pre-match crash. Another low moment will be the incredible finish to the Mali-Tunisia group match, with Zambian referee Janis Sikazwi blowing prematurely for full time. Elsewhere, there was joy for Doubletons, Gambia and Comoros, with both countries reaching the knockout phase. For Gambia, the lowest ranked of the 24 participants, they went farthest by reaching the quarterfinals. And talking about scoring goals at the 2021 AFCON, Cameroon captain Vincent Abubakar was the most lethal forward, scoring 8 goals, one less than the record for a Cup of Nations tournament held by now-deceased Congolese Ndiaye Mulamba since 1974. Mozambique-born Egypt boss Carlos Queiroz became the first coach to be sent off at the tournament. He was dismissed in the semi-final against Cameroon after being yellow-carded twice for outbursts. On refereeing, there were 14 red cards before the final, and Cape Verde and Ghana were the worst offenders with 2 each. Cape Verde finished with 9 men against Senegal after Patrick Andrade and Vojinha saw red. It's also interesting to know that 5 of the Senegal starters in the semi-final victory over Burkina Faso were born in France, including captain Kalidou Koulibaly. Footballers can actually represent a country where a parent or grandparents was born. Rwandan Salima Mukasanga became the first woman to referee a Cup of Nations match, where she handled the group match in which Zimbabwe defeated Guinea. It's back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Samson. That's Samson Omale, who gets an official Sunny Side of Sports salute for his outstanding coverage in Cameroon of the 33rd Africa Cup of Nations football tournament. Now let's go to South Sudan, where an 18-year-old female football referee, the country's youngest, says she is often bullied and discriminated against by her male counterparts. Picking up the story, here's Viola Elias in Juba.
Nyariak Mawir grew up in a family of male footballers and has always been passionate about the game. But she says it has been difficult to become a referee in a community where soccer is for men only. People usually tell me that women are not supposed to play football. Some families even stop their children from playing football. Others say, why would they allow their daughters to go and open their legs in the field? For me, I am with the boys, then I am a boy, but at home I am a girl and do all the house chores. That is why my family always allows me to go. Despite the negative comments, Mawir says with support and encouragement from a few individuals in the community, she was able to overcome the challenges and focus more on her goal of becoming an international referee. Mawir says besides herself, there are only three other female referees in Tonj and Kwajok. She is appealing to parents across the country and in Twitch Mayardit in particular to allow their daughters and sisters to engage in sport activities.
In 2021, I went to Juba and did some training, then came to Awil, where I found more than 10 girls.
49-year-old Adele Daniel says she too faced many challenges. Daniel says it was more difficult to be a female referee during her time because back then society was not sensitized on gender equality at all. Daniel says her male colleagues often made fun of her and bullied her.
Whenever I entered the field with shorts, they were not comfortable. They called me names and said, "What kind of woman wears that? Why is a married woman dressed like this?" and so many things. But for me, I believed they wanted to discourage me from my passion.
Mabior Mayot is a male football referee in Juba. He says in years past, male referees like himself tended not to consider female referees professionals. Mayot says discrimination still exists against female referees in villages across the country because of cultural tradition towards girls.
In Juba, seeing female referees is something normal, but to others, it is not right for women to become a referees. In the Juba Football Association, there are female referees that we got trained together as referees. So seeing female referees to us is normal, but to the male referees in the States, this is something difficult for them to accept because the cultural norms in the villages, it is more difficult to an extent that some family members do not allow their female children play football.
Mayot encourages his colleagues in the States to stop intimidating female soccer players and instead offer them support so they can improve their skills and move on to the international arena. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. President Joe Biden says the United States removed a major terrorist threat to the world, referring to the leader of the so-called Islamic State, Haji Abdullah, holed up in northwestern Syria. My two Middle East analysts, Jennifer Caffarella and Brian Katulis, talk about the significance and ramifications of the raid and what his elimination means for the future of the terrorist group. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Boston Celtics center Enes Kanter Freedom has become known for his pro-democracy activism both on and off the court during his 11 years in the National Basketball Association. He was born in Switzerland to Turkish parents, and he's a prominent critic of both the Turkish and Chinese governments. In an interview with Stella Su of VOA's Mandarin service, the big basketball player talked about his journey to the United States and officially changing his last name to Freedom.
You know, I remember first time coming to America back in 2009. I came here to play basketball and go to school same time. And I came here to play prep school. And I remember, you know, we were in a locker room and one of my teammates criticized the president of America. And I was very scared of him because I thought that he was going to be thrown in jails. And I even asked him, like, hey, you know, are you not scared? You know, he's like, he turned around and laughed at me and said, this is not Turkey. And he tried to explain to me a little bit about what freedom of speech means, freedom of expression, freedom of religion and press. And I was still very shocked and amazed at the same time. And I researched and I found out that not every country in the world is like Turkey. And that's why I wanted to make that word part of me and carry it everywhere I go. And also the other thing is, I wanted all the young kids out there, NBA fans, and especially sport fans out there, to just research about what freedom means and why did I choose that last name.
After living in the U.S. for more than a decade, you became an American last November. How was this decision made and why at this time?
You know, I was very, obviously, very excited. At the same time, there was a lot of emotions because I remember first time I stepped into this country, I wanted to become a part of this great nation. At the same time, you know, obviously, because of some of the, you know, human rights abuses are happening in Turkey, and I'm very outspoken about it. You know, Turkish government revoked my passport and put my name on Interpol list. So unfortunately, I was pretty much homeless the last 4 or 5 years. So that's why I wanted to become a citizen and just start traveling. And I finally, I received my American passport 2 weeks ago, and I'm finally going to be able to travel outside of America now.
Recently, former NBA star Yao Ming invited you to visit China. You accepted his invitation and invited him to visit labor camps with you. Do you think that Yao Ming will come alone, and will Xi Jinping give you a visa?
I wanted to go. I really wanted to go. And I wanted to go see. But I told him, I was like, I don't want a propaganda. I don't want a luxury tour of China. You know, I want to see the real China and show the whole world that what's going on over there. I offered him that if I'm coming to China, let's go visit labor camps in Xinjiang. And let's go visit Tibet together. Let's go visit, you know, Hong Kong. And after that, when we are done, we can go and fly to Taiwan and see what democracy means. And obviously, after I posted that video, I was very shocked that he blocked me on Instagram. And I even put a tweet out there and say, that's what the little kids does, you know? I mean, as an all-star, as a Hall of Famer, a legend like Yao Ming, he was just embarrassing himself to the whole world. But I think what I will say to Yao Ming, if we sit down and have a conversation, I will just tell him to stop being a puppet of Chinese Communist Party. Stop being a mouthpiece of Communist Party and Xi Jinping. If you want to have a real conversation, you know where I live, you know what city I'm in, you know, just come here and we can have a conversation. And but don't come out there and say, I want to invite NS to China. And then later on, when I respond and say, yes, I'm coming, you stay silent and you block me on Instagram like a little kid. So if I have one message to him, he can be big in his body, but he has a small heart. He has a small heart and a small brain. So I feel like, you know, he needs to step up his game and just man up and come meet me so we can have a conversation together.
You mentioned that you have heard a lot about Taiwan. Could you share with us what have you heard?
I heard about that. You know, I heard about, obviously, Taiwan from my friends. And once I started to talk about these issues, obviously, I studied Taiwan a little bit. And, you know, the first thing I did was just put on Google Taiwan. That's it. And I went to Google Images. I wanted to see what Taiwan is about. And it was one of the most beautiful country that I seen on pictures. And obviously, then I had a conversation with some of the politicians over there, and also the president, Saida, sent me a very warm message. And that actually really inspired me. And she's definitely one of my heroes. I just want to get it out there. She's definitely, because she, I mean, obviously the country and herself have a lot of pressure of one of the biggest dictatorships in the world, China. And I think how strong she is standing and how strong the call 24 million people are standing and against this dictatorship, it's amazing. And so I did like a little research about the country, about some of the politicians, and it just became my favorite. And she is one of my heroes now. So, and she invited me over. She said they have lots of basketball fans in the country. So I would love to go to visit and have a big basketball camp over there and actually taste some amazing Taiwan food and just sit down and have a conversation with her. I think it is really important.
That's Boston Celtics center Enes Kanter-Freedom, and he spoke with Stella Su of VOA's Mandarin service in Boston, Massachusetts. And we'll hear more of their conversation in the days to come. Earlier in the show, we heard Chelsea defender Antonio Rudiger say the team has a chance to win two big football trophies in February. One of them is the FIFA Club World Cup trophy, which will be presented Saturday in the United Arab Emirates. VOA's Gwen Uten joins us now with a preview of Chelsea's Club World Cup title chances. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. The Club World Cup is the only title Chelsea has yet to win. They kick off their campaign as the tournament favorites, and only two matches stand between Chelsea and the trophy. On Wednesday, the club will face Al Hilal in their opening semifinal match. And Chelsea midfielder Jorginho told reporters his side is focused on bringing the trophy home.
You need to stay humble, because if you underestimate the opponents, and then you can be in trouble. You need to be prepared. You need to train well, sleep well, eat well, do everything as professional as you can to arrive in these games and to be able to win, because it's what we want to do, is what we like to do. We don't like losing games, and we want to bring this trophy home. And to do that, we absolutely need everyone involved and everyone with the commitment, and that's what we are doing.
The last time Chelsea appeared in a Club World Cup final was in 2012, when they suffered a devastating 1-0 defeat to Brazilian club Corinthians. Chelsea captain Cesar Azpilicueta played in that match, and the club's longest-serving player reflected on coming short of the title a decade ago.
Losing that one in 2012, it hurt a lot, and this is the only competition that the club didn't win, not myself. I think to win it for the first time for the club is huge. We have to make everything that we have to put it out on the pitch. I think it has a great meaning for everybody, for the fans. We are representing Europe, and we have to evaluate how difficult it is and all the journey that we have had to make it here. We have to give everything, and hopefully, then go step by step, because we know it's going to be difficult. But when you have one chance like we have in this tournament in this week, we have to make the most of it and hopefully take it.
Chelsea, who are currently third in the Premier League, will play Wednesday's Club World Cup match without their manager, Thomas Tuchel. Tuchel tested positive for COVID last week and was not cleared to travel with his squad to Abu Dhabi for Wednesday's match. However, goalkeeper Edouard Mendy did arrive in Abu Dhabi to rapturous applause and congratulatory hugs from his teammates. Last Sunday, Mendy's crucial saves at this year's Africa Cup of Nations helped Senegal lift their first ever AFCON trophy. Mendy now hopes to add the Club World Cup title to his growing list of triumphs. The final match of competition is set to take place in Abu Dhabi on Saturday. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And that wraps up the February 9th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.